Good morning and welcome back to another edition of Breakfast with the Gators. Unfortunately, we're coming here live Sunday morning to discuss the Gators' 18-16 defeat to USF. As you can see, my name is Jackson Raymer. We're part of the Stadium & Gale Network. I'm alongside Devin Connell, who's obviously moved on to basketball season, as you can tell by the hat and the national championship background. Sam Gravelon, he has moved on to Minnesota Vikings season. I don't know who you're opening with tomorrow, Sam, but I hope it goes better than what we witnessed last night in the swamp. And Will is all business. It sounds like he is flight tracker season as he looks for the Gators' new head football coach. I'll kick it to you, Will. First time back in the swamp this year. You know, we were 1-0 without you in attendance last week. You come back from London and the Gators throw a stinker against USF. What were your thoughts last night?
Yeah, I'm back from the TM Crumpets podcast wearing my G-Unit Billy Napier Black Flag mentality hoodie. And what I saw last night was it was an abomination, really. But it was kind of a microcosm of everything that Billy Napier is. If you go back to Billy's time at ULL, he built the best roster in the Sun Belt, but just played one score games over and over and over again. And a lot of times he kind of lucked into winning games and then ultimately winning a championship and getting the Florida job. Come now, and we're now into year four, and it seems like he is addicted to playing one score games. And so, you know, I kind of just look at how the game went, and it was so clear from the very first drive that we were so much better than them. I mean, Neil Blackman wrote an article last night, and I read that Jaden Ball, or the Gators in general, averaged 7.1 yards per carry when we were going inside gap or off tackle. And for whatever reason, Napier inexplicably just like decides that it's time to throw the ball, maybe just because we haven't thrown it in a while or something. But we were running it down their throats, and Golish must have been sitting there on the sideline thinking like, wow, I hope they start throwing the ball. And that's really what we did, and it killed all three drives. Lagway did not look good, and that sort of played out throughout the entire game, and you get to the end there. And this is really what I think sort of defines Napier's his sort of term here at UF. He is he's just not qualified to be our head coach. He does not understand X's and O's and in-game management the way that a University of Florida coach should. And it all culminated in him just watching 45 seconds roll off the clock with two timeouts as they were getting ready to kick a game-winning field goal on our own turf. And so it was pretty mind-numbing to watch. It was like every little possible bad thing that could go bad did. But that's kind of why I'm bringing up the one-score game thing, is because he plays the games on the margins every single game. And when you do that, loud plays become so exponentially important. So, like, you know, things happen where a guy is going to, you know, your six-star center is going to snap the ball over the punter's head, or you're going to have two DBs run into each other and somebody scores a touchdown. Weird things like that happen. Byron Brown, you know, escapes not a sack, and he makes a crazy play. That happens, but it doesn't matter if you take advantage of every advantage that you have. And those first two drives, we were running it down their throats, and he just inexplicably stopped. And so what should have been a 14-0 game was a, 6-3 game. And as you give these sort of Cinderella teams hope to just – the game gets shorter and shorter and they get more hope, and the, you know, the Goliath team gets sort of more nervous and more nervous. And you could see it in his fourth quarter interview on the sideline. He just – he had no idea. And we've seen this happen against – Arkansas, we've seen this happen against Utah. He doesn't have it. He shouldn't be the head coach of the University of Florida. He probably will be through the year, and so it's who we're stuck with. But my 12-0 prediction was wrong, so I'm here to eat some crow.
Well, Dad, with you being in the stadium, I'm sure you noticed the 2-minute warning video that they play. I believe USF was inside the 35-yard line, and Napier had a quote in that video. We have talent. They have talent. Let's make it about the other stuff. What did you see about the other stuff tonight that, you know, eventually unfolded to tonight's last night's loss?
Yeah, you know, Nick De La Torre on Stadium and Gale earlier this week said that our podcast was going to be unhinged whenever the Gators lost a football game. Well, we spotted the ball, Billy. We spotted the ball, and it wasn't LSU. It wasn't Miami. It wasn't Texas. It wasn't Texas A&M. It wasn't Georgia. All those guys are still on the schedule. It wasn't Tennessee. It wasn't at Ole Miss. It wasn't Florida State. All those games are still to come. They're all still on the schedule. We still got to spot the ball for those guys. But guess what? We spotted the ball against USF tonight, and we weren't ready to play. And it blows my mind. We're 41 games into this guy's tenure, 41 football games, and we're playing no margin for error football. And it's just what Will said. He said it perfectly. When you play no margin for error football, yeah, maybe it keeps you in games against teams that are as talented or more talented than you, and you end up winning football games like we did against Ole Miss or LSU last year. But when you play football like that, it keeps teams that aren't as good as you in the game. Because we're not coached well enough to play error-free football. Because you drop a touchdown pass in the first quarter. You have two touchdowns that get called back for penalties, whether they were good calls or not good calls. You get two touchdowns called back for penalties, and you can't overcome that, and you settle for two field goals. So instead of scoring 21 points in the first half, you got 9 points all of a sudden. And then you're in a four-quarter ball game. And it's a white-knuckle grinder all the way to the end. And you look up at the end, and it's 18-16. It blows my mind that this is where we are, you know, 41 games into this guy's tenure. And shame on me, shame on us for buying it and believing it, and you know, having the hope that our quarterback would be coached up enough to overcome the coaching deficiencies. Because clearly he didn't practice enough the offseason. Obviously he's hurt and everything. But it's just excuse after excuse. It's been 4 years, and we lost to a directional school in our own state.
That can't even get their own direction correct.
That's where we are in year four. So we can say all the lies all offseason we want to say. The ball got spotted, Billy, and it's still terrible football. It's terrible, and it's totally unacceptable. I will say the good I saw was Will Richard and Walter Clayton were introduced in the middle of the first quarter to a standing ovation. The defending national champion Florida Gators are back in action on November the 4th, live in Las Vegas against the Arizona Wildcats. And Sam, with that, I will swing it over to you, my friend.
Yeah, you guys have nailed it pretty much on the head, and you guys were all there in person, so sorry that you guys had to watch that like in person. Watching it on TV was incredibly frustrating just because it seemed like, obviously, like you said, he's just not cut out for the job, and there were just too many coaching deficiencies that were just right in front of your face. And it seems like every time it was like, all right, now we can finally take control of this game, go score a touchdown, we wouldn't do it. And like Will said, we got away from the run, and then in the second half we tried to get back to the run and run the game out when we were winning by 1 point against USF, and it just wasn't working. You know, we'd run on first and second down and put ourselves in these third and mediums, and we weren't converting them. And like you guys have mentioned, DJ just does not look sharp right now. And we can say he looked bad. You know, he had the same similar misses that he had a few last week, a couple high throws here and there, and did not look good when pockets would collapse, tried to run maybe a little bit too early. And like Will said, it's just not the guy for the job. And like we mentioned, you know, Devin, you moved on to basketball. I have to put my faith in the Minnesota Vikings, and that's an incredibly vulnerable and scary spot to be in. And I have no one to blame but Billy Napier and I suppose my parents for, you know, bringing me here. But, yeah, that's a scary spot to be in before the Vikings even play a football game. So I'm not looking good, guys. This is bad.
Yeah, Sam, right there with you.
It's, it's really hard the way you sort of watch Billy's games play out. Like, everybody kind of knows that the bugaboo with Florida this year was, will they be able to get over Billy Napier being Billy Napier? And today was just the most Billy, or I guess last night was the most Billy Napier game we've seen in quite some time. I guess maybe the Tennessee game last year. But it's just the repeat errors over and over and over again. He's so similar to like Mike White, in my opinion. Mike White's teams would have these random wins. Like, I'll never forget the COVID year when we had like 5 or 6 scholarship players and they somehow beat the Tennessee team. And every single time Mike White teams won a game, they would all read their press clippings and like have the biggest letdown ever. And it was like the team read about how they 0 penalties and everything, and 11 penalties tonight. And some of them were, you know, kind of some phantom holding calls, and there was a phantom OPI on Hansen and all that stuff. That's the whole point about the error-free or the margin-free football. And it's just, I'm sick and tired of Billy Napier. But you know what? We're going to spot the ball next week. We're going to go over to Baton Rouge. And I'm sure that we're probably going to play them to some white-knuckle game, and we might be here like, oh, Billy Napier is back. But it's the same old story with him every single time. Like, he is just not good enough to win championships at Florida, and that's what we're trying to do. Like, our expectations this year, mine, of course, were 12-0. But, you know, most people are talking 8-4, 9-3. That's just simply not good enough. Like, and then you come out here and you lay the most stinker of stinkers against the University of South Florida.
And Will, like, we were foaming at the mouth on Thursday to get back out there because we were so disappointed in how we played against LIU last week.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, I don't even blame the players. Like, players make dumb plays, things happen, but Billy constantly puts them in places where their errors just become so magnified. And it's brutal.
The fact that we manufactured a 3-point lead at halftime when Ball had, I want to say, like 5 carries for 61 yards or something to that. That might be wrong. I haven't gone back to look at
what it's something said. Like that, yeah.
But he manufactured somehow a 3-point lead at halftime and 9 points out of what could have been 21 or should have been 20.
I still don't even know what happened on the 2-minute warning, where he just inexplicably decided to go no huddle, even though we've been terrible at that, and we bungle it, and then they come down and get a field goal. I mean, Billy coaches, like, he has a wire into the opposing huddle, and they're circled around thinking, like, man, I really hope Florida doesn't do this, and he just stops it. Or they say, man, I really hope Florida starts doing this. And then he just does it. He just does exactly what they want every single time.
It's a great
every single time for 4 years. Like, oh, it is brutal. Like, it is making me have gray hairs. I'm gonna have to go back to work in Tampa on Monday. And I told my paralegal, it's a closed door office day. I'm not talking to anybody in the office. Not after USF just walked into our own stadium and then just had the saddest funeral while Billy sits there in his black flag mentality, watching seconds tick off the clock, and then says after the fact that I was trying to maximize the time. Well, nice job. It ended up with 2 seconds and a game-losing field goal.
Where do you rank this, Will, Devin, and when Sam gets back on momentarily, in terms of program history, maybe not program history, but our lifetime, an empty swamp, echoing is our USF chants throughout an empty swamp. We're walking down the concourses from level 2 out of the stadium. It's fire Billy Napier chants. I mean, last year.
Here's the thing is it's like what, Billy's worst loss of the last like 5 losses? Maybe? A&M was awful.
It's most embarrassing.
Miami was awful. Arkansas was unbelievable. The Tennessee game last year, I understand Tennessee was a good team last year that made the playoffs, but like,
I would say it's the worst in Arkansas in terms of like the opponent and like
where we are preseason.
Obviously, the product was terrible in Miami and Texas A&M, but like those are still pretty good teams. I mean, they both finished top 15 last season. Don't quote me on that. But like the, and to be fair, USF could be, you know, the group of five representative in the playoff for all we know. But like, still, like, I don't care. I don't. I'm here to tell you, we don't care.
We did not care. We were so much more talented that team. It was so clear from the first two drives.
It was the most embarrassing loss I've ever sat through in the Swamp. And Miami last year, I sat through way worse than that.
It was embarrassing.
Miami last year was embarrassing. Texas A&M last year was embarrassing. Arkansas was embarrassing. It wasn't in the Swamp, but Utah and Salt Lake City was embarrassing. When you have more than a handful of embarrassing losses that we can point to and say, no, this one was actually worse, you're probably not in good shape as a head coach. A direct in-state directional school coming into the Swamp and winning against the top 15 Florida team with the talent that we have, it's catastrophic. It's absolutely catastrophic. I had friends texting me, Georgia fans, Florida State fans texting me, they're such sickos. What time does the podcast drop? It's the most embarrassing loss I've ever sat through.
Especially just three shows ago, we're hyping up this team, playoff bound. You've got Billy Napier as your hot take. SEC Coach of the Year, Dev, I think, that is officially in the toilet. But it should be.
And shame on me. Shame on me.
Hand up this entire podcast. We eat crow on our predictions. I know, you know, Billy Napier's been in this situation before. We thought last year there's no way in hell he could dig himself out of that hole. He found a way.
He shouldn't have.
He should not have. I agree. He got lucked out by DJ Lagway stepping into the starting role due to an injury and propelling this team to a victory. I don't see that this year. We have a much different quarterback in DJ Lagway that we had at the end of last year. I don't know. He doesn't look quick when he escapes the pocket and goes downfield. He looks slow. Too much Chipotle. Yeah, too much sitting around in the locker room, listening to music on his new beats and eating Chipotle.
All the talk about Tyler Mills and our quarterback comes into the season weighing 247 pounds. I don't want to hear another word about the strength program. Not a peep about it. The stupid Twitter discourse in the offseason.
It's always going to be an issue here, apparently. And it's crazy how it is. And it shouldn't be.
Yeah. And arguably the biggest discourse we heard all offseason is how dominant this defensive line is. And our edge players are just top notch in the country. We're going to wreak havoc week in and week out against our opponents. I believe we have one sack in 8 quarters. And that came midway through the fourth quarter. But thanks to Tyreek Sapp.
Pretty late. It was pretty late.
And it was like, it was a big one.
It was huge. Yeah. It was a big time play. I think they missed the 58 yarder.
In hindsight, if he had not gotten that sack and they make a field goal, the game is totally different, and we probably don't lose on a game-winning field goal because Billy is forced to do something different. Right. So, I mean, that is life under this Billy Napier regime.
It's just it's crazy you mentioned that because he misses that kick in.
And we have lost Sam again. But, yeah, Will, you brought up a great point. That would force Napier's hand to go down the field and do something and score. I didn't understand the play calling. I thought the first half, you know, we only had one drive in that first quarter. The second drive in this first half, I thought we just played bully ball. I thought Jaden Ball was fantastic. And then we have this just trickery bullshit with the, I believe it's Jaden Ball that took the snap, or someone, I think Eugene Wilson took the snap, handed the ball, and a reverse to Lagway for a throw. I don't even remember what the route was he threw it to. And then we won on second and 20, a wildcat with Jaden Ball.
Billy calls plays like on NCAA 26 when you can move the cursor over to feature a certain player. It's like he's like, okay, this is Jaden Ball's turn. All right, even though it's having unbelievable success and we could probably do it 100 times for the rest of the game, it's Trey Wilson's turn, Mr. Yak. And then, you know, we got to mix in Tony Livingston because we've only seen him drop 6 or 7 passes in his career. Let's see if this is the one he catches.
Tight ends are egregious today.
Aiden Hansen's covered in the end zone. We got to get the ball to him.
It's inexplicable. Like I'm telling you, it's literally like he knows what the other coach wants him to do or not do, and he plays right into their hands.
I think in the first half, Livingston had as many targets as J. Mike, and Hansen had as many as Eugene Wilson, while Hayden Hansen's targets were down the field. So it's just – it's inexcusable at this point. It's frustrating. I don't know – I'm sure we all had the same reactions with the fans around us.
I mean, Livingston and Hansen were both running routes at the same time, like together. Like,
yeah,
we shouldn't be doing that.
It's well, the craziest part too is that you can tell the pieces out there. Like, Vernell Brown looks like one of the best wide. Probably he looks like the best true freshman wide receiver we've had since Percy Harvin. Like,
easily.
That guy's speed, quickness, you could see it on that reverse.
He's incredible.
You could especially see it because you could almost compare it directly to the reverses that Trey Wilson just took. Trey Correct. Wilson has lost a step since his hip surgery. VB3 is like the quickest dude out there. It needs to be a feature offense between him and Jaden Baugh. And
VB3 is what we think.
VB3 is like sixth in line for touches. He's got to wait until, you know, Mr. Yak and all the tight ends, they get their due.
And we can't lose sight of the fact, too, that VB3's punt return led to our only touchdown of the second half. Started on the 20-yard line. It wasn't necessarily that Billy put together a beautiful, well-scripted.
That's exactly right.
I don't – you know, he could have accepted the penalty. You know, he declined the penalty to make him punt again, man. That Billy, he's really learning.
Getting yards.
That was a good move. I will give him credit. Like, that was a good move, making them re-punt.
It was the best move he did, but it's a shame that he had to do that to make VB3 make an explosive play.
When the bar is so low.
We ran that reverse in the first half, and VB3 ripped it up for 20 yards.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like you mentioned, like Wilson's definitely lost a step. I thought he wasn't just a screen merchant tonight, and he actually had a pretty fine game.
Mm-hmm.
And
I guess that's what I mean. Like whenever we're throwing him on these reverses, like it didn't work last year against Tennessee, and it hasn't worked at all in two games against what's supposed to be the two easiest games on our schedules. But you're right. Like when he's in the slot and he's running slants, like he's a good route runner. I don't know why we don't. Like if you look in the spring games when we have Russ Callaway and Ryan O'Hara calling plays, which also doesn't make sense why the guy who call plays on game days would not get more reps and call plays during the spring game. But anyway, Trey Wilson runs routes downfield. So it's frustrating to watch, man. It is like watching Billy Napier football is actually annoying.
Oh, it was an incredibly tough watch. Like I said, I couldn't imagine being at the stadium. Like, and it seemed, I mean, the broadcast didn't mention like any Boo Birds till probably like the fourth quarter. Like, kudos to you guys for waiting that long, unless it was quicker than that.
Florida fans are so unbelievably brainwashed. Like, I'm sitting there in Touchdown Terrace, and I get it. Like, Touchdown Terrace is more of a wine and cheese crowd than you're going to get, like, down there. And there are people around me talking about, oh, we got to be patient. Like, you know, we're playing well and stuff. And I'm like, you blind? Are we watching the same game here? Like, this is USF. This is not the LSU or the Ole Miss
game. The talent is scraping.
This is USF.
Not. Those types of fans, too, and you hate to cast aspersions on people. You see Steve Spurrier walk out with the 2000 SEC championship team. And you look up at the walls and you see all those conference championships. You see three national championships. And to think what this guy, and quite frankly, what the last four coaches have done to this football program since Urban Meyer left, it's just, it's sickening. It literally makes you feel ill watching what Florida football has become under this guy.
But a little silver lining that I think may come out of this, there is no more, well, we can't fire him because of DJ Lagway. That jig is up.
Yeah, that is long gone at this point. All right, let's jump into our first caller. I believe we had a few voicemails letting us know their thoughts, especially
be one.
This is Burkle Live from the game. We need to fire Billy immediately. He cannot coach another football game at Florida. He needs to go now. Watching this game is atrocious. A safety against USF. I'm not going to swear on the podcast. What are we doing? Have a great one.
Yeah, thank you, Burkle, for the live call-in during the game. That must have happened right after the safety, which our six-star recruit, long snapper, which I think was the first in history. The Gators end up losing by two. Rocco Underwood, who, as one of our listeners quoted him, who thinks he's Tom Cruise, you know, he has not been spectacular this year so far. But
hey. You know, shout out to the punter. That was a heads-up play, knocking that ball out of bounds. I don't know his name because, contrary to popular belief, punters do not matter. They should not matter. Neither should kickers. This is the University of Florida. We score touchdowns.
We are
a really nice heads-up play.
Dev and I are in that side of the end zone, and, boy, he only got that out of the end zone. I think he had about 18 inches to kick it out of the back of the end zone. He hit it maybe 19. He almost whiffed on kicking it out of the back of the end zone.
Hey, as Billy Napier will tell you, it's a game of inches. Every little thing matters. And
those are the hidden yards. We got game changers out there that are doing their job. So, good on them.
And but, in retrospect, if they had gotten a touchdown instead of a safety, we might have had to call the game a little differently.
A little bit different. Obviously, Will's wine and cheese crowd, they are not firing Billy Napier, but Devin, you're down there by the tunnel where the Gators run out of. Much different crew down there, much livelier. We saw it last year at the A&M and Miami games. You know, the fans let him hear it when he's going back into the tunnel post-game or even at halftime. What were the conversations around you late third quarter, fourth quarter?
I don't know what the conversations around me were like, but I know what my personal conversations with Billy were like, and they were not repeatable on a family show. So we'll let what was said in the stadium stay in the stadium. However, I guess the silver lining of being ready to fire a coach every September the 6th is that we can start looking around the country and picking out if we want the Lane from Oxford or Alex from Hyde Park or who else is out there? Urban from
Kenny from Scottsdale.
We got John from Bayshore as well. I know he wants to get back coaching, especially in the SEC. There's some names that can fly out there. It's just unbelievable, guys. 7 days ago, you know, our entire season's ruined at this point. We're already starting to get on flight tracker season. Who's willing to come coach for the Florida Gators just 7 days into the year where we believe this is a playoff-bound team. And it's just so depressing.
We can talk about whoever we want to talk about. We're going to get summer off from New Orleans, and we're going to like it.
No. We're getting Billy Napier from Lafayette, Louisiana, in Gainesville, Florida. I guarantee you he will coach through the season, and he will be here next year too. And
I've got breaking news, Will.
Because we're winning, breaking news.
Billy Napier actually called into the show.
If you want to hear his
voice,
I'd love to talk to you.
This is Billy Napier, and I just wanted to say, spot the ball.
Which is now, I think, Devin, you gave him credit for 41 games. I think he's only been here for 40, so we're not giving him above 500 record. I believe it's 20-20 as the Gators head coach, which getting paid $7.5 million. His boss, which Will was not here for last week as he was watching Premier League soccer over there in London, his boss just got extended for another, I guess, 3 years on his contract, but through the 2030 season with also an advisory role to oversee the replacement AD at that point in his retirement stage for 5 years. So, yeah, I'm with Will. This guy's not going anywhere.
As crazy as that is, we do have a national championship winning head coach that shows no matter what kind of issues you have in this athletic department, if you're good at your job, you can win championships at the University of Florida. And well, and that's what we can't lose sight of when we're bashing Scott, rightfully so, is this guy is the worst coach in the history of Florida football, and it's not even close. And if we get somebody in here, which we've said this four coaches in a row, that isn't a complete and total buffoon, then Florida football is still capable of pulling its weight in the everything school discussions that we like to have about the University of Florida. So,
yeah, so I hope Billy takes a look at what Todd did. Because if you look at Todd's first year and his second year and his third year, we had some issues offensively and some issues with guarding, and he took those things head on. And they changed their system. If you listen to the guys over at Florida Basketball Hour, Neil Blackman and Eric Fawcett, they do an unbelievable job of just describing the different schematical things that Golden has done over the course of 3 years that ultimately spurred the Gators to a national championship. And I guess that's one of the most frustrating things about Billy is it seems so clear to the naked eye what is wrong, and he just refuses to do it. Like, I won't even say that the scheme of the plays is bad, but it's so clear he has no rhythm as a play caller. And it's clearly, I mean, maybe he's just a terrible game manager, but it's like we might as well give up the play calling if it's going to be at the expense of the game managing. And so I hope he takes a lesson from Todd Golden and takes a look in the mirror and says, what do I need to do to make Florida a championship program? Because he has done a great job of building a championship roster. That defense was flying around tonight, and they were put in the worst situation possible. And then they had two bad plays, and that was the game. And one of them was like just a boneheaded decision from a player spitting on somebody, which is just unreal. Come on.
Terrible timing.
Terrible timing, literally in the news everywhere. But that's Billy Ball. That's the black flag mentality, baby.
For a guy that preaches discipline and playing the game the right way, you know, we have a lot of boneheaded mistakes. I think Will mentioned it pre-show, the two players in Florida history to be ejected from a game have been Jamari Lyons and now Bet, both for spitting on a player, and both of those have been under Billy Napier. I mean, my thought is, you know, the team backed him in the post-game interview show. I got to listen to that on the drive back to Jacksonville last night. But, I mean, this is just inexcusable. I think he needs a Leon Orr treatment, a one-way ticket on a Greyhound back to where he came from. You know, Baylor allowed 44 points today. They got boat raced by Auburn. Maybe he can go help their interior defensive line death, because we can find someone else on this roster that is not going to put us in situations late in the game to give up free 15 yards.
So is Caleb Banks, like you said that he was good before the game, maybe. Was this a situation, was it a Kyle Pitts against LSU in 2020 situation where the mindset was, oh, we can handle South Florida and we'll save him for LSU? Jackson, you might have a little more insight than I do on what the status of Caleb Banks is and why exactly we have a transfer from Baylor that got here 3 weeks ago.
No comment.
Respectfully, though, even if Caleb Banks plays, like, I think we still lose the game. Like,
No. I'm talking about in that particular situation.
Yeah, he's not in the game at that point in time, probably, to, like, spit on the player, but, like, doesn't make much of a difference. And, yeah, that's a good point. Great comparison to the LSU with Pitts and, you know, resting him for – that's – we were like, oh, in a perfect world, you know, Banks plays LSU and we're ready to go. And here we are with
I don't even think that would make a difference, because like the defense played great.
They did.
They were putting terrible, and they had one bad play where the safety in the corner ran into each other and it went for a bomb.
I don't know if you guys can tell from the field, they weren't set at all for that play. They got completely caught off guard by the hurry up. They were on the broadcast, they were all looking at the sideline. And then they ran it, and then they got cooked. And honestly, if they were paying attention, it very easily should have been an interception back.
Maybe Byron Brown, he floats the balls. Like, Devin Moore had one where if he goes and gets the ball, that should have been an interception going a long way the other way.
That was on a third down.
Thornton had one in the first quarter, too.
We had like three type plays like that. There was one thing to talk about USF and a potential coaching candidate. I thought that USF did a really good job of switching up the tempo, going slow when they wanted to take some time off the clock, and then speeding it up in situations where our coaching staff and our players weren't ready for the tempo to get sped up on them. There was, I think it was the first half, a particular, like, I think it was fourth and two, fourth and three, where we're trying to do a full line rotation and get caught with too many guys on the field.
It's just, yep.
Fourth and two. Really stuff like that that's just infuriating. Yeah.
I thought Golish coached a great game. And, I mean, he's done this. Like, he did that against Saban's last Bama team. Like, he is great at recognizing that his team has a talent deficiency. And so he coaches around that to make the game shorter so that it gives his team a better advantage to have these crazy plays that ultimately can win them the game. And I mean, hats off to him. Billy gave him so much credit in his press conference. And, like, yeah, credit to USF. But I thought he coached a great game. I was sitting there. I thought it was from the first pass we threw after Jaden Baugh had run 50 yards down their throat. I had a feeling that the best head coach on the sidelines was wearing black on the visitor's side. And, unfortunately, our coach was wearing black on the home side. I don't know if it was a wear blue or orange or white game, but Billy was in black. So, but as I've always said, he continues to dress for his own funeral. And so the jokes are right in themselves, which is really fitting because we've kind of turned the whole Swamp experience into a meme now. I mean, the pageantry is kind of lost. Like, we don't play Gator Bait anymore. We don't really let the band do its thing. We have to play the DJ over and over again. I think we hear Travis Scott like 6 or 7 times a game. There's one particular meme going, and it's all just such a joke. Like, we don't even play Thunderstruck anymore. We've played Thunderstruck at the beginning, the opening kickoff, since I think like 2001, maybe 2002, and we just don't play it anymore. And I don't get it. Like, you need those things to hype up the fans and really create an intimidating atmosphere, but I guess it just sort of goes to Billy and the UAA playing college football on hard mode as hard as possible for no reason at all. It's just, how can we make it most difficult on ourselves? And this is what we get.
I do have a question for you guys, just kind of based on your atmosphere, not to just rehash more on the game, but like, at what point in the stadium did it feel like, we're in trouble. Like, this is bad.
Second quarter. I think you could tell pretty quickly when we went over 2 in the red zone and we weren't pulling away from an inferior USF team. It was just the writing was on the wall right there that this was going to come down to the last drive or two in the fourth quarter and we'd have to make some plays. So you had that feeling in your gut well before we even got to halftime. I feel like at least I did in the fans in my section and my friends that were sitting with me. This just looked like a typical Billy Napier coach football game. And we made mistakes in the end, and USF did not, and they capitalized. But that feeling, and it really sunk in the third quarter. Did we get a penalty to start the second half? What are we – there was
– We went three and out. And then we got a delay a game on the punt.
That's what it was, yes. And that really just took the air out of the stadium.
That was when it was for me.
63-yard punt.
It was the three straight passes, two of them were sacks, and a three and out to start the second half was where I was like, oh, we're about to be in a real dogfight for four quarters. And then there was a moment, it was right after the safety. We were down 15-9, I believe.
Yep.
And then the fourth quarter starts, and it was like, we are the boys and won't back down, kind of snap the crowd in.
How did those feel?
Well, it was actually a good, like, rendition, I guess. Who cares? It was a good rendition of won't back down. But it was like that kind of woke the crowd up to, oh, we're playing in a fourth quarter football game as 17.5 point favorites against South Florida. So the crowd got loud. We immediately got a false start on USF's offensive line. Forced a three and out, and then that was, I believe, or it might not have been a three and out, but forced a punt. They had their flag, and that was when Vernell Brown had the the long punt return. So then we get the momentum back, and then we force another three and out. And then Billy goes into – there's 10 minutes left, I think, in the fourth quarter. And Billy goes into – we're going to run this ball down their throat for 10 straight minutes mode. And
– with my not as good running back.
With not as good running back and with a one-point lead where if you don't score or if you don't get into at least field goal range, a field goal can beat you. So you're coaching not to lose as a 17.5-point favorite at home with momentum now.
Yep.
For the last 10 minutes of the game. And the plan, I guess, was we're going to take 7 minutes off the clock. We're going to score a touchdown and be up by 8 with 2.5 minutes left.
Yeah. But Devin, that's exactly where I felt it. I actually thought after the BB3 thing that it seemed like we had kind of woken up. The swamp was going crazy.
Yeah.
And it seemed like one of these classic games where, you know, the big favorite is in a dogfight. Something happens. The Goliath grabs all the momentum, and then they end up winning by like 13 or 14, and they're like, we "Man, we played terrible."
Yeah, I thought for a chance that we were going to maybe cover the spread. I was like, "Oh, yeah, Vernell Brown housed it. You know, got it to the 20-yard line. We scored two more times, and the score, yeah. The box scores, may go make it look like a lot bigger a victory than what we had."
Right, but then it was when we got the ball with 10 minutes left, and there was no sense of urgency, and it just. It kind of goes back to what I was saying, that he just, like, doesn't get how to manage a game. Because even, like, you have no reason not to score as quickly as possible in that situation. Because if you do, you have a big lead, and they have to throw the ball the whole time to play catch-up with a team that is really not that equipped to throw the ball like that. Like, that's not what they are. They have to keep you off balance and beat you with QB runs and try to, you know, scheme around that with some screens and stuff like that. But so if you do that, you put the pressure on them, and it doesn't really matter if you're putting the pressure on them with 8 minutes left or 5 minutes left. Like, and then if you don't score, like we didn't, and there's 5 minutes left, all of a sudden all the pressure is on you to hold a 1-point lead while they have what do they have to lose? They're USF. And so I keep saying the same thing over and over again, but he insists on playing one score games. Like I have a bit of a conspiracy theory that it's because he wants to build suspense for these journey videos so that we can, you know, have the recaps on Tuesday or Wednesday. And it's just like the men, this group, the grit and adversity they showed a lot of character, and they go out and then, and he wants to play every single game where it's like a 27-23 NFL style slugfest. But like, this isn't the NFL. There's a big talent gap between us and a lot of other teams, and he's hell bent on coaching it to where one play makes the entire difference in a 150 play game. And it's brutal, and it's almost just like poetic justice that, you know, Red Zone starts today, and the witching hour will happen around like 4 p.m. And the Gators got witching hour last night with the snap over the head and all that stuff. And
there was multiple witching hours. That was one witching hour. Then we take the lead. And then the final drive was like a whole witching hour with the penalties and everything. And just to the point of the play calling when we were up 10 minutes, only wanted to run the ball. And then we get the ball back again, still leading, with maybe like 3 minutes and some change left, and then we throw the ball instead of running the clock out, and then it's a bad throw, incompletion, and then you shoot yourself in the foot. Like, it's just
and that one even is like
really backwards.
Apparently, Lagway may have audibled to that throw, and then
he threw the broadcast mentioned that.
But it's just like, to me, it's hard for me to blame Lagway when you've seen so much of bad process, like. You've got to rep that. You if you're taking mental reps, then you better be taking a lot of close game mental reps, right? And so it's like, okay, DJ, we have a 1-point lead. What do you mean you're audibling? Like, you have to coach him through that. And you have to be prepared. Like, you play so many one score games, and it's unbelievable how unprepared Florida looks in close games. And they always seem to make the catastrophic error. Like, I think maybe the only one score we've won a couple against LSU and Ole Miss, but like the South Carolina game last year where it was like we needed a tip pass right into the receiver's hand to go for a touchdown, all that stuff. Like, he just requires freak plays. I used to think that Billy would be our Ed Orgeron, but he's not good enough at game management. Like, Orgeron was terrible at it, and he was a great recruiter, and he lucked into a national championship. But Billy is so bad, he probably won't even make the playoffs.
No, God.
12-team model, which is just, like, absurd. I hope we make the playoffs and win the national championship, and this is our NIU moment. But I think the more realistic scenario is we are going to go, like, 6-6, 7-5, not make the playoffs, and he's still going to be our coach next year, and we're going to do the same damn thing.
Well, and
the problem is we do have talent, and all of us are going to root for the Gators in every single game, of course. We're going to beat top 25 teams. We have 8 of them on the schedule. We're going to beat a couple of them just by virtue of having talent. I don't think we're going to go into Baton Rouge next week and win, but it would not shock me at all if we played the exact same style game against LSU next week.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what he does.
3-point, 7-point game, coin flip, it could go either way type of game. It would not shock any of us to play that kind of game again.
Just like he did against Tennessee last year after he was pronounced dead.
And just like Ole Miss and LSU were last year, too, that he was on the right side of. LSU technically was a 2-score win, but we had the long ball run at the end of the
game. Ole Miss, was a 1-score game that had it was like a backdoor.
Right, a backdoor 2-score win. And then Ole Miss, they
Billy
had
was ball. Trying to make that one a 1-score game, and the talent overcame.
Exactly. So I have no doubt in my mind that, I mean, this, of course, they could let go of the rope and it could be a catastrophe. And, you know, then there's no question about whether he's back or not. I'm assuming I would think that another year of this and the national nightmare would be over for us. But if I had to guess based on Billy's history, we're looking at 7-5, 6-6. We beat a team that we have no business beating, maybe 2 teams that we have no business beating. And the
conversation is all of our contributors are freshmen and sophomores. Let's them develop one more year to upperclassmen and have this whole circus show for a fifth year. I think the most mind-boggling thing Will touched on is the management aspect of it and personnel. You know, Vernell Brown, 6 in the rotation to get his touches. Jacoby Jackson had 1 carry going into the fourth quarter. He had 5 on that drive to start with 11 minutes left. 5 of his 6 carries for that
was his turn. It was his turn.
Cannonball.
Jaden has to wait his turn until Jacoby is done. That's the rules.
It's unbelievable.
It's just like last year before Graham got hurt when Billy decided no matter what the situation of the game is, Graham gets two drives, then DJ gets 1.
No.
Obviously we all have noticed the red flags. That's your red flag in itself. You're no matter what the situation is, we're putting DJ Lagway on his own 10-yard line in Neyland Stadium, no matter what, just because it's the third drive of the game.
No.
This is coming from the process guy. Like his process is bad. Do you guys remember? Do you think he still writes in that little notebook that we had heard about? He takes a single note every day.
The notebook that got Billy Napier the job that impressed Scott Strickland so much makes so much sense now because he can't do anything past the notebook. And the notebook
it's crazy.
He's going to write everything that he's ever learned from Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney and whoever else he's lucked into a job working for. And that's it. I'm going to go into this interview and I'm going to show Scott Strickland this notebook and he's going to be so impressed with how organized I am that he'll have no idea that when a change of possession happens, we might have to call a timeout that, you know, it turns out we'll be later in the game.
Don't even get me started. I mean, how many times have we had that situation happen under Napier where we call a timeout coming out of a timeout?
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
Like, to avoid a delay
what are we
of game,
doing?
A delay of game in the fourth quarter at a critical part of the game.
I don't get in the stadium, but like I'm at home, it's like, all right, we're commercial break, you know, go up, grab a drink or something, come back. and it's like there's 5 seconds on the play clock, and like the camera's still like zoomed in on like our huddle. It's like, what are we doing? It makes zero sense.
And I think, I mean, all and actually, it all makes sense because he is not good at calling plays. He can't get in a rhythm. He doesn't know, like, oh, I'm going to call this play and call this one next, that sort of thing. He just doesn't have it. And so I think what happens is that he's sort of thinking too long. And then, you know, things happen with players. They're 18 to 22-year-old college kids. Occasionally they line up in the wrong spot. QB has to get them to avoid the procedure penalties and all that. And next thing you know, it's 5 seconds on the clock and you're calling timeout. And then USF's getting the ball back and you only have 2 seconds left and two timeouts left. And they're able to run it down to 2 seconds. And then they kick a field goal. What do you guys think real quick? Do you think we should have let him score? Do you think Billy even knew that that's the only way he could possibly win the game again?
He mentioned that on his, I believe, his on-field post-game interview with Tate Casey. It's a different scenario. We had 3 timeouts, and we just talked about where we burned one of those critical timeouts right there, how it came back to
us. I'm looking for the guy who did this.
In that situation where they got to, I believe, inside the 15-yard line, realistically, I believe we were at that point under 30 seconds, maybe 25. So there's just not enough time.
I think he's totally wrong. If we do all the scouting that we claim to do, that USF kicker is a favorite for the Lou Graza. He's the son of a kicker played at USF and then played for the Bucks. Right. His brother kicked for USF. He came up a yard short of nailing a 58-yarder the drive before. He's an unbelievable kicker. When they entered field goal range, they were like around the 30-yard line, which is only a 47-yard field goal, with like a minute 54 left. Clock stops after a first down. We should have let them run 30. Like, who cares if it's a 35-yard run or a like 6-yard run that we let them score? We should have let them score. And they were literally trying to. I can't believe they didn't even take a knee, which is a little bit of a red flag for goalish in the future. Just, you know, put that one in the tickler file. But they would have scored. And then we get the ball back with like a minute and a half left in 2 timeouts. And finally, we get to just let DJ go play, just like we did in Tennessee when we were down and he threw that dart to DK yesterday.
It's so
frustrating. But the guy doesn't get it. And instead, he just literally sat there watching it. I mean, he literally looked like a Christmas Carol, like Scrooge standing on the sidelines, just watching terribleness play out. And he did nothing about it.
He admitted it.
His reasoning is so flawed because you still should take your timeouts as early as possible, because once you do that, the only way you can possibly win is if you have them snap the ball over the head or something or force a fumble. But you have to create more plays for that to happen.
And he admitted, he goes, we got to a situation where we knew even if we called our timeouts on first down or third down, they were going to line up for a field goal to end the ball game. And it's back to your point of allowing them to score. Even if there's 45 seconds left, we had to burn timeouts, and we still have an opportunity to move the ball down the field. College game, the clock stops after first down, so you have time to go up there and spike it and lose 3, 4, 5 seconds.
What if the punt returner who had just corked out a major return returns the kickback?
Like, right.
What if he gets you to the 50 and all of a sudden you have 15 seconds and they have only kicked, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you.
One thing on not calling a timeout, letting so much time go. It's like the reverse. We were on defense, but when it happened for this coach, they were on offense. It was last week, Deion Sanders. They didn't call timeout. Let's like 40 seconds go, and it's that's a tough parallel to be drawn. But he just let too much time go, and he shot himself in the foot and should have. I think they almost kind of did when they got like to the 5-yard line. It looked like they Castell. I'm not going to say anything about his performance, but terrible.
He was just getting bulldozed, and he should have just carried the guy into the end zone.
It looks like he bounced off him a little bit, like maybe like, yo, just get in the end zone. Very poor game from him. Hey, they'll just call him out by name like that, but very bad. Tight ends were bad. Billy Napier was bad.
We're calling
all, and it started pregame. Sam, you weren't there, and I don't know if they showed it on the broadcast once they zoomed into the swamp, but they hadn't even played the gator swimming through the water yet with us doing the gator chomp, and the team's already running onto the field. The guys with the flag, the cheerleaders with the flags were so unprepared.
It was a bad boy.
Yeah. It was this all-around mess. When the lights finally came on, multiple letters with where it says, this is Gator Country or national champions, lights were out. I mean, top to bottom, it was a nightmare situation in the swamp, from the communication to get the team on the field, the in-game management, and just the quality of the swamp itself. The presentation of the stadium was pathetic. So I was concerned out of the get-go as soon as I saw the team trample the cheerleaders and the flag holders out of the gates. I knew something was wrong.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, so when you go back to when did you get that feeling in your stomach, is that moment right there at probably 4:13.
Crazy. I just want to say one thing about, like, the flags and, like, how crazy it was last week, no flags. And we talked about a lot. We couldn't really evaluate a lot of things last week because of the opponent, which obviously loomed large, even though they had a big win yesterday against Eastern Michigan. So now we're really banking on LIU to boost up their stock this season, get some wins, which is crazy. But you would think that if one thing would maybe translate, it would be the flags part. Like, instead of, you know, you're not going to maybe run for the same amount of yards and stuff like that, but you would think maybe that can stay consistent because that's something you can control regardless of what your opponent is. And it was just, aside from spitting on your opponents and some of the other, like, flags. And granted, the one on Hansen that took back the touchdown, not a great flag. Like, was it by the book? Technically, yes. Soft. But, like, any time we did anything remotely good, there was a flag. The little flag ticker would come up on the score bug. And it's just it's just crazy how you go from zero last week to over 100 yards in penalties.
After you're chomping at the bit to get back on the field and clean up your mistakes.
Foaming at the mouth, Jackson.
Foaming at the mouth. That's just inexcusable. Billy Ball at its finest tonight.
We're going to jump off sides. we're just going to jump.
We're going to spot the ball is what we're going to do.
I have a great family. I have great friends. I have a great job, great community that I live in. Billy Napier is ruining my life. I cannot tell you guys how excited I am to watch Travis Hunter play for the Jaguars later today and maybe get this taste out of my mouth. Not holding my breath. The Jaguars have never been known to let me down before. But Billy Napier is just a terror on my quality of life. I do not know how much more I can take watching Billy Ball. It's the worst product. You wait 9 months to watch that, and to have, you know, September 7th roll around again and be ready to fire the same guy because he lost in week two again, lost early in the season again because he wasn't prepared to coach a team.
Has he ever been 2-0?
I don't think so. No.
Not oh my lost goodness. Kentucky in week two. His
boat
first
race year. And boat race in week one the last 2 years.
Man.
He's just always beat. This is such familiar territory for him. It's unbelievable.
It really is.
It's a repeat. He was every August, year. And we all drink the Kool-Aid.
And you think someone who's so, like, meticulous and put together as him with this arm. He, by the way, I'm pretty sure our, like, recruiting coordinator had a headset on and, like, a play sheet in his hand. But
I saw that.
Neither here nor there.
I don't think that's a violation anymore now.
I'm not saying it's a violation. I'm just, like.
It's just another person on the channel.
It's pretend meticulous. It's not. this.
You would think that all of this offseason, like, it would be like you actually like come out of the gate swinging and then like then maybe lose some momentum when your star quarterback gets hurt or whatever.
He's just stupid, Sam.
I don't think he has the killer instinct. He doesn't have the killer genes.
No, I mean, he's fired from almost every job he's had, and just thank God Scott Strickland is our athletic director, and it's the only way he has this opportunity at the University of Florida. So you can't be mad at Napier for being in this position.
Spinza, who hired him at Lafayette? I think we need to blame them.
There's a lot of people to blame, Sam, but I think that's...
I don't even blame Strickland for hiring him. I thought it was actually a pretty good hire. Like, what he did at ULL was great. But Strickland does these things that are just, like, inexplicable. Like, his massive contract, give me a break.
It's just...
You could go back to, you know, his extensions of Mike White. Why? You could go back to when he extended McElwain, even though there were issues going on within the athletic department, and apparently they didn't get along, but he's just like, screw it, it's somebody else's money anyways, let's just extend the guy, and then, you know, we fire him. So he just does really weird things with some of these people, and that doesn't even get into, like, you know, the women's sports and all of that. But I'm fine with the hire of Billy Napier, but it's clear it's not working. And the thing is now we're not even going to do anything about it. Like, we're going to wake up next week. We're going to play LSU with Billy Napier. We're going to wake up at the end of the season with Florida State. It's still going to be Billy Napier. We're going to kick off with who even knows next year, and it's still going to be Billy Napier.
8 days ago, the UA spit in our face announcing the Scott Strickland extension the day before the season opener. Alongside, I think 90 minutes before that, the Kevin O'Sullivan three-game suspension that happened three, four months ago.
Or something nobody remembers.
Yeah.
Then we fast forward to last night, and we get spit in the face again, literally, by a transfer to a guy that, you know, joined the program just 2 months ago. I'm sick and tired of it. All offseason I said he has until Miami to prove me wrong, and the guy couldn't last seven days.
Different in-state school.
And another thing, I'm terrified to go down to Miami for that game.
Man, I mean, and you guys going to LSU, like,
yeah, have fun.
Another thing on Strickland blowing the money for McElwain, like, doesn't even matter. And then obviously we move on from McElwain. He did it himself. He hires Mullen, a couple good years there, but like, that was his guy at Mississippi State. So did he even really do like a coaching search there? Like, was it just like, and then he hit the Mullen button too early, and then he has to hire, and then now we're with Napier.
You know, Sam, and to that point, we had such a quick trigger on Mac and Mullen. Like, when we knew it was over and it was done with, and they're out and they're gone. And we're like, okay, well, this wasn't working. So we pulled the trigger and said, we're going to hit reset. We do that for the guy, Mac, for all his faults, made it to two SEC championships. Mullen, for all his faults, went to three New Year's Six bowls and went to an SEC championship. So those were the guys that you cut right away, knowing that it wasn't working. But Billy, this guy is the one that we want to give the longer leash to. This is when we're like, okay, guys, it's time to settle down. We're not going to make any rash, harsh decisions about Billy Napier now. We're 4 years in. He's going to get a longer tenure than Mac and Mullen got.
In the modern
day. This is where Billy has us. He has this administration just so tied to his finger. Like, he's making a second guess whether we needed to fire Dan Mullen, who literally quit. He did not want to coach college football anymore. So he quit.
And if Dan Mullen,
Jim McElwain, who no longer wanted to be at UF, so he made up death threats. We're like wondering if it was the right move because of how bad Billy Napier is.
And if Dan Mullen,
we are literally in hell.
If Dan Mullen had this roster, he would never get it to Florida. He would never recruit the way that Billy recruited to get this roster. We don't lose this football game. And do any of us have any doubts that we're ready to play against LSU next week, Miami, Georgia? We're ready to play all of those games with this roster with Mullen at coach.
Mullen might not have played DJ because he might not have wanted to do a third QB draw.
Y'all know what I'm saying. You knew we were getting a decent offensive
game day coaching, a coach
that had feel for play calling and didn't make you want to rip your eyeballs out when you were watching it.
Right, like the those coaches obviously had their deficiencies, but like the product, like you could still, when it was good, you could still kind of get through it. Granted, McElwain, like even when we were going to the SEC championships, like it was still kind of a tough product to watch a little bit. Those defenses were elite. But like even when Mullen's years, when we were going to the New Year's Sixes, like the offense was so much fun to watch and we were so starved for a great offense. Now watching this on TV, like it is just –
it sucks.
It's not fun to watch. Like it is just – like I'm
brutal, man. You go see your family.
I watched this over like the Kansas-Missouri game. The Kansas-Missouri game was like 42-31. Like that game looked awesome, and I was too busy watching Billy Napier get in a rock fight with USC.
Scoring 16 points as a 17.5 point favorite.
I got up at 5:45 yesterday morning in Jacksonville to get to the tailgate by 8 a.m. in Gainesville, Florida, thinking this is just going to be a lovely day. The Gators are going to move on to 2-0. And all of that fun I had from 8 a.m. to 3:15 before we wrapped up the tailgate just vanishes. All of it is just worthless. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of my money. And I'm sick and tired of having to come here and support him every week. And he's going to drag me back there in a month when we got Texas at home. And Arch Manning, who we've seen the last 2 weeks, stinks. And he's probably going to look like a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Nah, we're going to win that game, guys. Come
on. Nah, the defense. I actually thought that we were going to, you know, we were the first podcast to tell you that do not sleep on the South Florida Bulls. Go back to the intro. I thought we were going to play them pretty well, considering Billy's success against Heupel's Tennessee-style offenses. And I thought after that first drive that, like, okay, we only got three, but, man, we're about to dominate these people because they can't keep up with us on the front, on the offensive line. Little did I know that Billy was about to da-Billy it.
He went full Billy. No, I mean,
never go full Billy.
I mentioned though, like, that this is a game that let's see how different we really are. And you beat them soundly. And we lost.
And it's so funny seeing, like Lagway said in the post game, he's like, I'm heartbroken. Give me a break, dude. I mean, you see, this coach is 20-20. I don't know what he is selling these 5-star recruits. It's honestly insane. I'm heartbroken, too. I mean, my 12-0 is gone. It was so close.
It's crazy. The national championship battle, like, it only lasts. I mean, Grant, we still have that. They can never take that away from us.
They can never take that basketball national championship.
They rejuvenated so much life in the athletic program. You know, baseball got on a nice run right after. You know, there you go. Show it off, Devin. Everybody was buzzing. And here we go, 2 weeks into Billy Napier's year four. And it's all for nothing. But, hey, when do we play Arizona again in hoops, Devin? What day was that?
November the 4th, I believe. And yeah.
I'm going to set a timer on like the lock screen on my phone, change the background.
Yes.
And then, yeah. Have to watch the Vikings. I'm excited for the Vikings, but as we all know, if you're a football fan, you just know the Vikings and heartbreak are pretty synonymous. So here goes nothing.
Maybe that's how we end things off. Let's fast forward to basketball season.
Vikings, yeah. Flag, Super Bowl, calling it now.
And I'll wrap this up with surgery. I'll wrap this up with a comment from one of our viewers, Paul Norris, who just simply puts it, the players deserve better and the fans deserve better. That's 14 straight sellouts. 14 straight sellouts by us to watch this crowd, which is unbelievable that we will support anything.
In all kinds of weather, baby.
In all kinds of weather.
That's a threat.
We'll be back next week, post-LSU, Devin, Lovelace and Hunter will all be there in attendance. I pray for you guys. And we also will be dropping a new show this week. We're hoping for Thursday morning, Breakfast Bites. So we have some cool content coming.
Before we go, Jackson, before we go, I will say, I, along with Jacob Lovelace, along with Hunter Bedard, and a bunch of our other friends, will be in Baton Rouge next Saturday. And no matter what happened tonight, it's a new week. And I will go into Baton Rouge with hate in my heart for those people. I hate LSU. I hate Joe Burrow. I hate Ed Orgeron. I hate Mike the Tiger. I hate purple and yellow. I hate corn dogs. I hate those people.
Well, Jake Lovelace told in the chat today, this week, you know, you don't want me coming to your town and winning with the Gators as an 8.5-point underdog. Well, buddy, we're about to be a 14.5-point underdog. Do not let him win. And you're out. Your touchdown underdogs.
Dude,
they better not let us
hop on that friggin' on Wednesday, man. That's a missed opportunity.
Can't you just see it? We take down LSU and Baton Rouge. Billy's just saying, I told the guys this week, we just got to spot the ball. And I'm just so proud of these guys. I'm proud to be with these group of men.
It's a one-day contract in this building.
One last thing.
They're not letting us win in Baton Rouge.
The spread. So other than maybe Mississippi State, are we maybe a favorite in any other game this year? Maybe FSU? Kentucky.
We'll be the top 12 team.
Look, this team is going to rebound against LSU. They're going to do the same thing that Billy does all the time. He's the highest of highs. I can't really say highest of highs because we – the high is like
– the highest of his highs.
Beating an LSU and Ole Miss team that missed the playoff. Well, but the lows are low. So I fully expect us to go in there and just compete, man.
And one month from now, we'll be booing DUI ads, and Billy Napier doing Narcan commercials, and we are going to need Narcan for watching three more weeks of Billy Napier football. So,
you saved the zingers for the end, man.
We'll be back, fellas. Please like and subscribe. We are on YouTube, and we're also on Spotify and Apple. Please share, like, and subscribe. We'll be back later this week with a new show, midweek show. With former players discussing the upcoming matchup. For instance, this week we'll be focused on LSU. So please listen in on Thursday. And good morning, everybody. And
as always, it's NFL Sunday. Florida Gator.
It is great to be a Florida Gator. Congrats on the
Gators. It's still always great to be a Florida Gator. Wouldn't want to have it any other way, but man.
Have a great day, champions.